Precisely. So speaking of portfolio, Urbanist is my portfolio. So whatever video I make with Urbanist, may it be live, produced, or 360, I use that to show to my clients. My clients, for example, in the corporate world, don't care about having my audience or me sharing the video on Urbanist. That's the least of their concern. But they are impressed when they A, see a good video, but also B, that I get views on that video.
Hey friend, it's David Dubinsky here in New York City. So excited for you to learn from this podcast with my friend Ariel Vieira. Ariel and I have been friends in New York for a few years now through the Personal Development Nerds community. I've always been so impressed with his work from afar. I never really got a chance to learn more until just the other day. So excited to share this conversation with you. In this episode, you will learn how to tell better stories, as Ariel is someone who creates social videos. He is the founder of a company called Urbanist. For the past year, he's been running the Facebook Live show Urbanist and has amassed over 7 million views. You'll learn how his business is actually his art, which leads to freelance business work in film and social media related work, which is really fascinating. And we dive into that in more detail here, where he actually thinks content creators get things wrong and how to either love the work that you're doing or do work that you love, and so much more. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Ariel. So Ariel, if we were to go to an event tonight, how do you typically introduce yourself?
If I were going to an event tonight, I introduce myself basically how I introduce myself to everyone. I'm a filmmaker and storyteller, and I run the Facebook show Urbanist, where I explore cities all around the world and its history.
So how did you get into kind of storytelling and social videos?
Yeah, well, I've always wanted to become a filmmaker since the age of 5. So that has always been the dream of mine. But I only started pursuing it professionally when I started working for Vox Media and doing social video distribution for them. And I got really hooked on finding a way of getting an audience, even if it was a video that I never made. However, luckily, Facebook started paying major media companies to do live video. And the vertical I was working with, Curbed, had no video department. So I volunteered to do social media / community management via live video. And I did my very first live video on Bryant Park, just showing the views of Bryant Park. And even though I didn't talk in that live video, I saw the magic and the possibilities of being able to tell stories via an unedited, rehearsed video.
So you immediately saw it working and then just said,
okay. Yeah. So the very first instance I ever appeared on camera was when I had to start getting editors in front of the camera. And a lot of the editors that were working within the office, part of Curb New York, were really camera shy. They were so camera shy that they didn't want even to be on Snapchat, which was what I was doing before Facebook Live. And I thought to myself, you know, I really want to do a live video with someone talking. So I asked the main editor, what neighborhood of New York City do you love the most? And she lit up and she said, oh, I love Brooklyn Heights. And I love, you know, all about the Brooklyn Bridge. And I saw the passion in her eyes. And I told her, that's what we're doing. So we did a video of the Brooklyn Bridge and its history and its architecture and design. And it was a hit immediately because I shared those videos with specific sites about New York City. And we immediately had a large audience. So my very first live video where I appeared on camera along with my editor, got 43,000 views.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I can't guarantee 40,000, but that's great. That's when you know the product works.
Yeah.
And so love to dive into Urbanist in more detail. And so you started that company and for three years, maybe
take us to that moment when you decided, like, I want to start a company on creating videos.
Yeah, it was two factors. I loved history more than design and architecture, which was what my current job was at the moment. And they were shifting more into like home decor, which even had me less interested. So I wanted to talk about the history of cities. And then the second factor is the company, unfortunately, didn't want me on camera anymore. And I was so, like, I was in such utter joy of this newfound medium. I thought to myself, oh my God, I just really found something that really clicks with me. And I was getting like tens of thousands of views by doing these videos. And I understand where they were coming from, but I thought to myself, oh, hell no. I'm going to do this on my own. I'm going to focus on history, which I want to focus on, and start Urbanist. And thus I did. All it took is just starting a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would love to talk about kind of the art of storytelling in a second. One thing that when I was doing a little bit of research, I thought it was really fascinating is like how you have kind of like projects and work that you can always kind of fall back to. And that, in my words, you know probably more than I do, but just in terms of like these skills that you could turn into like social media, marketing. And so maybe do you think that gave you confidence to start the company to say, you know, I can do freelance work if needed, and maybe talk us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I thought to myself, how can I be a filmmaker or a video maker with the skill set I had at the time? So for a quick background on me, I graduated with the degree of electrical engineering, then went into tech and started doing support. And through support, I ended up then later working for media and kind of doing a combination of support and community. And then later with Curb, I started doing a combination of community and social video distribution. So I kind of went through that route. And within that route, I had to learn how to talk to 100 people a day and sound personable in through email support, and then interface between engineers who speak tech and the users who don't speak tech, mm-hmm. and the editors as well who barely speak tech. So I had to kind of be flexible in my communication skills. And I realized that's why the pitch to my company of me starting their Facebook Live programming worked was because I already had that skill set of talking to people on a daily basis, especially communicating ideas that weren't easy to communicate across all realms. And I just used those skill sets to translate it into live video. And I think for anyone who's thinking about starting a new project within their company, I think whatever realm of project you want to go into, maybe video, maybe something artistic like music, maybe gardening, maybe interior design, maybe architecture, whatever it is, I think whatever skill set you already have will work in some way towards that. You just gotta find the connection. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how I found the connection was thinking about the very bare basics of making a good video. Bare basics of making a good video is A, getting an audience, at least with live video. So I learned that by doing social video distribution and getting hundreds of thousands of views for all the videos that were being produced. And then the second factor was learning how to speak to people in a very personable way, which luckily with live video, people are commenting. So I have to have a conversation and also tell a story at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And so, because storytelling is it's everything to some extent, right? And you know, whether it's on video and connecting with an audience, or selling a product, and as a salesperson, you know, convincing somebody else to buy your vision. So maybe talk us through some, you know, ways that you think about delivering compelling stories and storytelling.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, yeah, you're right. Storytelling is everything. And nowadays, people are so focused on telling good stories, and it makes sense because they do sell products and they do get people to buy into the brand. For me, while I was working at Vox Media, I had to turn a bunch of articles that were written by the editors and make them into very SEO-able, very easy to relate to, very intriguing one-liners on social media. So people can say, oh, I really want to read this article and click on it. So I had to kind of condense the larger story into a one line. And I had to do that way too many times per day. And that kind of forced me to think about stories in a very succinct way, to kind of not have too much filler, not too much extra stuff that no one really cares about. And when it comes to telling a great story, I think that's the key, is to be as straightforward as possible. Then, according to whatever time you have with the person or with the audience, then add more flourish to it. And I think to further answer your question, I think if people want to start thinking about telling stories, just think about the way I found the best way to tell stories is to not think about the outside, think about the audience, think about the higher ups in a company, think about editors or critics. No, I thought to myself, the best way I can tell stories by connecting it with me, because a story starts with you, the person, the storyteller. Mm. Whatever you're selling or whatever you're telling, it could be a product, it could be a brand, it could be a movie, it could be a Facebook Live video. So for me, when it came to doing my first Facebook Live videos, I decided to connect it with something I really liked, which was New York City, which was the Brooklyn Bridge, and connected also with my co-host at the time. And that was the first step, because you can be camera shy, you can be afraid of public speaking, you can have no clue how to structure a story. But if you connect it with whatever you love at the very moment, at that time, then you will have a great story. This great story will come out much easier. So that's why we recommend it to people.
It's being authentic and focusing on what you want. And yeah, I think I saw this quote from you in an article that you recently shared about like what fascinates you fascinates your audience.
Yeah.
And it almost, when I read that, it's sometimes people try to build a product for an audience. And the way I read what you wrote is more of like, do what you want and a new audience will emerge around that. And so sounds like if you're looking to start a project, grow an existing project, it's always like, we'll focus in on what you're most interested in.
Yeah, there's another saying that I kept repeating to myself as a mantra when I was working at a 9-to-5, was either you do what you love or you love what you do. Meaning that, yes, everyone says follow your passion, but when you say to someone, follow your passion in the state where they are not passionate, then you're asking them to look elsewhere, when you can find the passion within whatever you're doing at the very moment on hand. And the same thing with the story. I can find a product that will sell to people. I can find, for example, I'll do a very specific example. I did a partnership with Sennheiser, which is a audio hardware company, the second largest audio hardware company in the world. And I had to kind of connect audio hardware to urbanists, which is the history of cities. Superficially, there is no connection. But when I looked into myself, I said to myself, I really want to do something with Sennheiser, but I also want to make something that is authentic to my audience. I don't want to kind of cheat them and say, okay, now we're sponsored by Sennheiser out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. No, I wanted to connect it. So the way I found a connection was a comment I usually get in my live videos is people love the sound of the city. Mm-hmm. So they love hearing the car horns, the rumble of the city, the police sirens, etc. The second factor is I love using headphones, and headphones are a really great way, especially before telling a story, to listen to some music and let the story come together. So that was my connection point. And then the third thing was the history of Sennheiser, which was a family-owned company dating back to 1945 from Germany. And I thought that was really cool, that they're still a family-owned private company. That is kick-ass. And that's where I found the story that connected to my audience, but also connected to me at the same time. Mm. rather than me, because if it were up to me, the company I would work with right now would be like, you know, Marvel Studios. I would love to direct a Marvel film. But in the meanwhile, let me find the connection points to whatever seems doable right now at this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe switching gears back a little bit to freelance work, maybe talk to us a little bit about finding freelance projects while you've been growing the company. Has that been a focus of yours? I noticed, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So with Urbanist, that is one part of my business, but the second part is being a freelance filmmaker and offering video services to various organizations. I mostly do it through corporate events and through filming artists and performing arts. That I just found that was the easiest way of kind of not forcing Urbanist, which is, it is my passion. It is what I love to do. Not trying to force it to make money alone, because if I try to force Urbanist to be a full business, then it kind of will kill a little bit of the spirit of telling whatever story I really want to tell.
I love that. So then you have, the company has two sides.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. And I think, and it's the way that it complements each other, you probably get clients because people see the Urbanist side and then they're like, oh, we want something like that.
Precisely. So speaking of portfolio, Urbanist is my portfolio. So whatever video I make with Urbanist, may it be live, produced, or 360, I use that to show to my clients. My clients, for example, in the corporate world, don't care about having my audience or me sharing the video on Urbanist. That's the least of their concern. But they are impressed when they, A, see a good video, but also B, that I get views on that video. So that already shows to them that whatever video I'm going to make for them, they're most likely to get some views or people are going to like it.
Yeah.
So I think that's the benefit, at least if you want to be a content creator, that is the benefit of just making content, regardless whether it makes money or not, because that serves as your portfolio.
Let's keep going on this. So yeah. Then is that common in to have this, call it like a lead gen type of content play, and then, you know, then present that to... just like you do. Like, do you see that amongst your peers and stuff?
So, no, actually, I see a lot of my peers, unfortunately, trying to wrangle their content into making more money. So they start trying to get more sponsorships and doing sometimes sponsorships that really don't fit, or they don't have the time to try and make it fit, or adding services above the video, above the content that doesn't really make sense or sometimes seems a little bit too tacked on. No offense to content creators, but sometimes I don't actually care about your online course if you're giving me already free videos on YouTube. I just want to watch more videos and better videos. So I end up reading this amazing book called The 7 Laws of Money, which was written by a Wall Street broker in the 1970s that happened to be really into spirituality as well. And the first law of money was, don't try to make money from your art. Make money separately from your art, because that is the best way for your art to flourish. And then your art ultimately will be the main moneymaker. Mm-hmm. So that made something click in my head, because at that moment of time, I was kind of struggling getting more sponsors on Urbanist, because I like telling a whole variety of stories, and it's not just limited to history. Sometimes I talk about the occult, or I talk about mythology, or I talk about religion, or I talk about food history, or I talk about... I sometimes love making random videos where I do something that is very spontaneous. Once I was trying to get Urbanist to be a legitimate business, quote unquote... Yeah. That made me, it killed the spirit of me trying to do these spontaneous videos or these very risky videos, because suddenly I had to be very hyper aware of making Urbanist very good for sponsors, very palatable for sponsors, so they can think to themselves, oh, I want to associate with that brand. But the thing is, that's limiting. And then suddenly, I'm not only stuck with a business that is making mediocre money, I also lost my art. That made me think to myself, what are other ways I can make money without trying to wrangle urbanists to make money all the time? And the easiest route was to make videos for others. And something subsequently clicked in my head after that. Before I was trying to make these freelance jobs, making videos. For example, I made vlogs for a CEO, which was really fun. And I made like a social media consultation for another company. When I was doing those jobs, I would get frustrated because I also thought these videos should be my art. So I thought these ads that I was making for other people or vlogs that I was making for other people should be like something about me should appear. Like it should be the video I want to make. And that's because I was just wanted money. So I thought to myself, no, that is a service. So let me relinquish that desire to make art in all aspects of my job, focus on making the art on Urbanist or whatever short film project I do, and then focus on providing a service fully to the people, to my clients, in whatever way works the best for them. And that gave me the freedom, because then I started doing corporate videos and I found myself, oh wow, I can really find ways to make a better corporate video by still giving the best service to the client. And those small ways, for example, was in corporate videos, people who work in corporations, no offense to anyone who might be listening, it's due to the ambiance, they tend to be a little bit tight. They tend to be a little bit stiff. You might have noticed that in certain events. And it's nothing good or bad. It's just that that's the environment. You can't really express yourself too much. And one day I was hired to do a video for a company. I won't name the company, but I was hired to do a video for a very large company. And I had to like interview a bunch of employees for like an employment training video. And they want me to just ask them like two very basic questions and be done with it. I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to ask them these two basic questions because that's what they want. But I asked them, hey, can I also ask them like two or three lead-up questions? So just to get them opening up.
Yeah.
They were more than willing because they didn't care. I was already being paid what I was being paid. I was going to do whatever they wanted. And by asking them those lead-up questions, I got them to open up. These very stiff corporate people suddenly were giving me answers with a smile, kind of happy and giggly. And it still fit with the video because it ultimately ended up making a better corporate video. So that, I think, is the importance of the separation between trying to make money from your art and trying to make art from whatever you're making money with.
Yeah. That's fascinating. I mean, I feel like I haven't thought about that as much, or I haven't heard that as much. That's really interesting to think about the art being, you know, but you're still, it's still the same, similar skill set. Yeah. And I think that that's what's really amazing. You're getting in those, you know, like the Malcolm Gladwell book, 10,000 hours, you know, the 10,000 hours to become an expert, become a professional in that craft, well, on your own and also with clients. So that's really amazing.
Yeah, precisely. I'm putting those 10,000 hours in regardless. And I think the key is to be able to just differentiate between giving people something that they really care about because you care about it and providing a service. And those are two different things. However, ultimately, as you put in those 10,000 hours, and I, for example, already done storytelling for 3 years. I only have 7 years left until I become a master storyteller. Once I become a master storyteller, people will want to pay me to do the stuff that I already am a master at. So then at that point, art and the money making start really going in coherence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so you mentioned storytelling, mentioned how you kind of transitioned into Urbanist, talked about audiences, talked about freelance contract work while growing art. Is there anything else that you think we should
Yeah, so you, I framed it as art because in my context, I'm making videos and I'm telling stories. But this also applies to business. I think you can start a product or an app or some type of kind of service and still make it your art, quote unquote, while providing that similar product or similar service that is the moneymaker. And I think doing that separation is very key because, for example, you see this with kind of the when app starts, there's a differentiation between doing crazy stuff with the app, like on Snapchat or Instagram, where they Instagram offered really weird filters and offered like interesting features. Snapchat did a crazy interface. But the separation there was that they also had a product for ads. And that product for ads basically worked in any scenario that the app was changed. So they weren't compromising making money by experimentation. Mm. In those cases, they're the same app. But sometimes you can do it as two different apps or you can do it as two different services. In my case, they go coherently because I'm making videos that serve as my portfolio, that grow my audience. And at the same time, I use those videos to show to clients. And that is how I gain more clients. Mm-hmm. And also generate leads, because the videos I produce on Urbanist, people already know I'm a freelance filmmaker. So they might, if someone's watching them, might want to hire me. They already saw my content. So that's a great way to generate leads. Mm-hmm.
That's genius. I'm over here like, you know, what's the next question? But more I'm like, huh, that is genius.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the way you're doing this with your podcast, because in your podcast, you're doing this podcast, you're mostly focusing on just having great conversations with people you know or want to meet. If you start wrangling it to try and make a bunch of money from sponsorships, what would happen to your podcast?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, wouldn't happen.
It wouldn't happen. So I think it's important to have that mindset of that you can monetize anything. Anything is monetizable. Anything can be made into a product, but don't feel dependent on it, because once you feel dependent on it, then making that product is going to be way harder. So for Urbanist, when I began, it was a little bit difficult to think about products associated with Urbanist, because I thought to myself, I was trying to kind of figure out, oh, should I start offering private tours? Should I start making private videos? Or should I do scale up sponsorships? But I thought to myself, in due time, the ideas will start coming in. One of those ideas was getting patrons on Urbanist, mm-hmm. and start offering extra videos, specifically 360 videos. The second thing was merchandise, because I was already building a brand. So people, my audience already wanted to represent that brand. Mm-hmm. And for nearly 2 years, I delayed on starting merchandise because I thought to myself, oh, I can't really do good enough merchandise. Who cares? That's what I thought in my head, like, who cares about Urbanist? Like, really, to buy a shirt? Like, who am I to make a shirt? And I thought to myself, wait a minute. There's people literally telling me they want a shirt with Urbanist on the shirt. I mean, with the title Urbanist or with some illustration. And then beyond that, there's services out there that offer making merchandise for free. For example, I use teespring.com. Why am I depriving my audience of making good merchandise? And I thought to myself, let me just make good merchandise. So I just jumped in a few months ago, and it was to great success, because the audience, especially if you're making a content creator, maybe a podcast, online videos like me or films, the audience wants, if they really like what you're doing, they want to buy into it more. Give them the opportunity to buy into it more, whichever way is easiest. But those ways will sometimes pop out through doing rather than trying to think or strategize. because there was, if I try to strategize a merchandise strategy from the very beginning of Urbanist, then the merchandise would have been kind of, you know, it would have been like trying too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just let it naturally happen.
Let it naturally happen. But there are so many ways to facilitate once the idea comes and once the demand comes.
Amazing. All right, Ariel, we could talk forever, but please let listeners know where they can follow up and support many of your efforts.
Well, first of all, I want to acknowledge you doing this amazing podcast and grabbing so many wonderful people on it and really showing people the wonderful tales of their own experiences, because I think more people need to hear a variety of experiences out there. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
People can find me on facebook.com/urbanistlive. To see all my live videos, Urbanist History of Cities on YouTube, and arielviera.com if you want to hire me as a freelance filmmaker.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Ariel.
My pleasure.
Hey, friend. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. I'm really excited for you to learn from this episode and would love to hear any thoughts from you and continue the conversation where I post this episode on many different social channels. Please subscribe to wherever you listen to your podcast for my weekly Portfolio Career Podcast show, and really excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.